We are very happy to welcome all the students and special guests for this evening's Prerna Festival. So we have this evening the auspicious presence of His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj. So His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj is a very senior disciple of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. In his recently published book, The Journey Home, he describes very beautifully how at the very early age of when he was a teenager, he left home searching for God, traveled across various countries in Europe, in Asia, and finally came to India, and he was seeking spiritual guidance under various spiritual teachers who are today very big and well-established names in the spiritual field and yoga circles. And then finally he came across the divine auspicious presence of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, and he took shelter of Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, and then he started his services first as a pujari in New Vrindavan, and then later on he became a very, very successful college preacher, traveling all across North America, establishing what we now call as BASIS. These were originally one of his specialties. He established several bases in North America in different cities, college towns. And then in 1986-87, he came here to Chopati. And this was a very, very rundown, small place with hardly anything happening. And literally from scratch, he has built up this wonderful community with the divine inspiration and blessings of Srila Prabhupada's teachings. And this community of Sri Srinatha Gopinath Mandir at Chopati is a wonderful inspirational model for the whole of ISKCON community. And many of the senior ISKCON leaders have come here and spoken very kind words about the wonderful things which are happening here. And they have also acknowledged the very visionary work which has been conducted here under the guidance of His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj. He has also been inspirational in instrumental in giving inspiration for this youth preaching efforts. Way back in, 1992, Devamrit Prabhu was inspired by him to come to IIT and begin the preaching. And then later on, many of the young college preachers were inspired by him in 94-95. And then from then on, the youth preaching efforts have been going on. And the Prerna Festivals began also in 2002 because of his inspiration and vision. And today we are celebrating the 77th Prerna. And literally we can see that the numbers of students, even on a weekday, we are finding that 600 to 800 students are coming, which itself speaks volumes of the wonderful inspiration which people are deriving from this temple. So we are extremely grateful to him that he has always been kind enough to take out time in spite of his busy schedule for any of these Prerna festivals and youth festivals. And this evening he is going to be speaking on a very, very relevant topic, especially in this age of Kali and modern-day Mumbai. And one of the things which really kills people in this age is worry, right? So I think it was Shruti Dharma Prabhu who came to Chopati many years ago, and then he was telling that he was giving us statistics about Indians in UK, and he was saying that because of the fast-paced lifestyle in London, so many Indians there, they get killed, they get heart attacks, they get all kinds of things because of hurry, fast-paced lifestyle. Those who don't get killed by hurry, they get killed by curry. They eat all kinds of things and they get totally bewildered, don't know what to eat. And those who escape both, Hari and Kari, get killed by worry. So today Maharaj is going to be speaking on this very relevant topic, stop worrying and start living. So let's welcome His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj by loudly chanting, Haribo! Haribo!
I am very much grateful to be among all of you this evening, the 77th Festival of Prerna, and very grateful to all of you for coming during this very busy time of the year, on a weeknight where there was a change of schedule with such short notice. Still, so many of you have come. Thank you very much. If I had the time and energy to put a garland of affection and appreciation on each and every one of you, I would do it. But in my heart, I'm doing it at this very moment. Why do people worry? There are numberless reasons within the world that we live. We may be worried about our health, about our wealth, about our loved ones, our friends. We may be worried about yesterday or today or tomorrow. We may be worried about the environment, the situation in the world and politics. The nature of this world is birth, old age, disease, and death. The nature of this world is everything is always changing. And essentially, the biggest problem is we want to control our environment. And the eternal reality is, you and me, we are not the controllers. Things are going to go their own way. We can try our best, and to some degree we have influence. But ultimately things are out of our control. So to the degree we are attached to anything or anyone on this worldly platform, there will be worries. Attachment brings worry. Now, in the spiritual world, there's worry also. But because Krishna is the object, that worry brings happiness. It brings ecstasy. It brings us closer. But worry in this world is something very different. The cause, we will discuss. A lack of inner spiritual fulfillment. We have often given the example of a foundation of a building. Externally, it cannot be seen. It's hidden. It's something that you may say is internal. Externally, we see the building, the architecture, the furniture, the paintings, the particular building materials, maybe marble, maybe plaster. But it is the foundation that holds it up and gives it strength. Without a strong foundation, when a storm comes, it'll all be blown down. With a strong foundation, hurricanes, earthquakes cannot harm it. So our mind is stable when it has a strong spiritual foundation. Storms may come, reversals, but if we have that foundation of inner fulfillment, we deal with it with a very clear and practical mind, but it does not disrupt us, because we're connected to something that is immortal. We're connected to the truth. That is our home. Our home, our real home, is where there's comfort, where there's love, where there's affection, where there's happiness, where there's trust. That is the actual meaning of home. But in this world, we are like strangers in a foreign land. What is foreign? Misconception. I'm thinking that I'm someone I'm not. I'm thinking I'm this body. I'm thinking I'm this mind. The body and mind are subjected to unlimited reversals. And ultimately, the body dies and it gets old. But the Atma is eternal. The Atma in its own nature is Sachit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. So going back home to our real origin and uncovering the secrets of our true self is the way to come above all this needless worry of this world and find real fulfillment. Whatever happens cannot disturb that fulfillment. Apuryamana machala pratishtam. During the monsoon rains, a puddle of water gets bigger, 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 bigger. During the dry season, the puddle of water dries to nothing. It's very much affected by the rains. But the ocean, whether it's the dry season or the monsoon rains, it remains the same. What is the difference? The puddle has no depth. Therefore, it's completely affected by its environment, by circumstances. But the ocean in its own self has such depth. On the surface, it's affected by the monsoons. But deep down, it's not affected at all. It neither grows bigger or smaller. So yes, on the surface, we have to deal with the things of this world. But if we don't have much spiritual depth, it really can either elate us or devastate us with anxiety, misery, worry. But a person who finds that spiritual depth, who uncovers the truth within, deals with the things on the surface, but nothing can change that fulfillment. Nothing can change that meaning, that love that is within. Years ago, I was walking along a seashore, and I saw a little fish about this big, just maybe 3 or 4 inches in size. And he was laying on the sand. Whether it was a he or a she, I can't tell. As a sannyasi, I felt it wasn't my position to look so carefully. But this little fish was in so much worry. It was flapping, laying on the dry sand, flapping and flapping and flapping, and I looked in its eyes, I'll say his, I looked in his Sinsis's prerna. If I was giving this analogy in the Chaitanya, I would use her. But just to keep you all peaceful, I will consider the fish to be male. So, because I don't want to say it, that depersonalizes a person. So he was flapping and flapping and flapping, and I looked in his eyes, and he just looked in total confusion, frustration, and misery. Somehow or other, a wave just washed this little fish up, and there he was in the sand. Couldn't breathe properly. And I was just looking at him, flapping and flapping and flapping. Oh, was he suffering? He was hysterical. Now, I could have got a female fish and put him next to her. Would that help any? I could have gotten some mango lassie with a nice sanitized straw and put it next to him. I could have gotten a diamond ring or a ruby crown. I could have offered him a BMW. Would any of that make him happy? Because he was out of his natural element. Nothing could make you really happy unless you're out of your, if you're not in your natural element. So I tried to pick up that little fish and throw him back in the ocean. But he was so intensely worrying that every time I picked him up, he just flapped so hard that he flapped right out of my hand back into the sand. I picked him up again and he flapped out of my hand into the sand. At least 5 times I picked him up and he flapped out. I was his well-wisher trying to save his life, but he couldn't recognize me because he was just in such a state of trauma. Finally, with both my hands. Now, people, if they saw me, they would have thought I was crazy. But with both my hands, this little fish, I cupped him in and trapped him so he couldn't get out. Then I threw him as far as I can into the ocean. And I thought I did a good deed. But then the next wave came. And then it receded back into the ocean. and left the fish flapping in the sand. With two hands, again, I trapped it. It was trying to get out. It was flapping, flapping, flapping. It was my whole body was vibrating. It was just a little... And I, hard as I could, threw into the ocean. But I waited. The next wave came in. Then it receded back. And left my little fish flapping in the sand. Now I was committed to save this fish. I tried to pick up the fish again, and it was flapping, flapping out of my hands. I eventually, somehow or other, tried to escape, but I caught it, caught him. And I went into the ocean, carrying him, step by step, up to my knees, up to my waist, up to my neck. And I had the fish over my head, and as hard as I could, I threw him. Then I came back out. I was wet. And the next wave came. No fish. I watched the next 12 or 13 waves. No fish. Oh, I felt that fish will never recognize that I saved his life. It was a selfless task. Thankless task. I got all wet. Spent so much time that fish will never thank me. Doesn't even know who I am. But I walked down a little, and I was feeling very nice, because that fish, really, when I saw him, when you see somebody really suffering, you naturally feel something very personal. Yes. People who say there are vegetarians who eat fish, they say fish don't have feelings. Fish have feelings. Fish worry. Fish want to live. That fish was struggling and flapping as much as any human being would in that predicament. May not have had an intellectual understanding of what was going on, but the emotions were there. I walked down the shore for a few minutes. Then I saw a boat coming in. And with the boat, I saw people. There was fishermen. And they had stretched a net a long distance along the shore. And they brought the net in. And I looked in the net, and there were hundreds and hundreds of those same little types of fish flapping and about to be put in frying pans. There was nothing I could do. I wasn't going to fight all the fishermen. But I was thinking that saintly people, that is the thankless task. They work so hard to make one person, to put one person back into the ocean of their natural position. But Maya, with her net, especially her internet. And so many other networks and net profits. Takes people out of their natural position and puts them in this unnatural situation on the shore and the sand of material existence. But who actually are we? That is the most important question in life. Essentially, there are three planes of consciousness. There is the plane of enjoyment. There is the plane of renunciation. And there's the plane of devotion. Now, the plane of enjoyment, in order to survive, the environment is geared toward exploitation. The Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a beautiful verse that ends, jiva jiva sajivanam. That those species that have hands, their food is for species without hands. Those who have four legs, their species are for those who don't have legs, like the grass and so forth. So in the animal species, even when we look at a beautiful natural scene, there's so much competition there. Like that fish was, I'm sure, very happy, frolicking in bliss, because the fish's natural place is in the ocean. Yes? Could swim. Could breathe, could be happy, could find friends, could have a family. But on the shore, because it's unnatural, no matter what you do, it can't really find happiness. It can find some relief, but not real fulfillment. But this analogy is limited, because even in that ocean, there's bigger fish that want to eat it. Yes? And it could be eaten at any moment. So we look at the beauty of the ocean, but factually, fish are eating other fish at all times. And birds are killing insects, and cats are killing birds, and bigger birds are killing smaller birds, and big animals in the forest are killing little animals. Yes, the fox may kill the rabbit, then the leopard kills the fox, then the hunter kills the leopard. Then time kills the hunter. So there's this competition. It's the nature of the world. Why? It's because of selfishness. Because we put ourselves in the center. And we look around at all the conflict. There's conflict among nations, conflict among religions, conflict among races. Conflict among political parties within a nation. Conflict among family members. Conflict among different types of businesses. Conflict among different teams of sports. And there's conflict within our own minds. There's so much, it's a world of conflict, is it not? Because everyone has a different center. Now, for those philosophers who promote the path of renunciation, it is taught that there can be no peace in this material existence. Because everything's temporary, everything's changing, time is going to kill everything, and there's so much conflict for survival and for greed and for everything else. And we're exploiting so many things. So let's get out of this existence completely. Renunciation means have nothing to do with it, any of it anymore. And their goal is like a deep, dreamless sleep, a type of samadhi, where there's just no more pain, no more suffering, no more birth and death. There's just deep sleep. You don't even have consciousness of your own identity. Now that's peaceful. In the West, when there's on graves, it says rest in peace. Now if death was actually the end of everything, then you don't exist anymore, so that's quite peaceful. But the problem is you're going to be reborn according to your karma. Because in the world of exploitation, for every action there's a corresponding reaction. There's the laws of karma. You may hurt somebody to get up, but that same type of pain has to come back to you. It's the law. You can't get away with it, either this life or the next. You may get it in this life and get smashed, or you may take your next birth in a terribly horrible situation, but you can't escape. The reactions will come. It's karma. So we want to get out of this karma. We want to get out of all this frustration. So nirvishesh sunyavad. Go into this dreamless sleep of samadhi. Enlightenment. But the third path is devotion, which recognizes that the highest of all solutions is to understand our origin, who we are, and who is our origin. What is our origin? And to live in harmony with that. The Vedanta Sutra is a summary study of all the Vedas, and the Srimad Bhagavatam is a commentary on that. So the summary study of all the Vedic literatures. The first verse is Atato Brahma Jigyasa. That now that you have taken this rare and precious human life, it's time to inquire into the absolute truth. And the next verse is Janmadyasayataha, which means the absolute truth is from whom everything emanates. The Ishopanishad explains Om Purnam Ada Purnamidam, that the absolute truth is the complete whole, which is perfect and complete. And all emanations and everything about the absolute truth is perfect and complete because the absolute truth is perfect. So here we find if the absolute truth or the complete whole or God is from whom everything emanates, the source of everything that exists, who everything is coming from, who is within everything, and who everything is within. That is the whole. That is God. That is what we all have in common. That's the center. When we learn to recognize that, we could actually have harmony within ourselves and create harmony within the world. And what is our relationship with the Absolute Truth? Lord Chaitanya's first teaching to Sanatana Goswami, Jivera Swarupoi Krishnera Nityadas, that we are servants of Krishna. We are meant to serve. What is the problem with the environment these days? The ecology. It's a serious problem. No need to go into any details because you're all college students. I'm sure you're in touch with the news and you know the foreboding disasters that are looming over us unless we make serious changes. I was told by some geologists, not by some swamis, but by geologists, that within 50 years, if we don't seriously start changing our policies as far as energy goes, there will be no Ganga and no Yamuna. They will be totally dried up because of global warming. Now, how many hundreds and millions of people are depending on those rivers for survival? In fact, geologists say that, you know, some wars were fought over coal. Other wars fought over oil. In the future, there will be wars fought over water. It's very difficult. You can't live without water. If we exploit the environment, we're going to get the reaction. If we serve the environment, we're going to create harmony. We're going to create prosperity. It's all a matter of consciousness. You see, this is why the conceptions of evolution, of just an evolution of matter, is very dangerous conception. Because how does it impel us to improve our character? We understand that ultimately everything is coming from consciousness. It's the basis of everything that exists. God is the ultimate source of consciousness. And we as living entities, our basis is our consciousness. Consciousness is the symptom of the presence of the soul. If we forget our own souls and we just think we're matter, then ultimately nothing matters. Matter only matters according to your particular preference. There's no absolute standard of what's right and what's wrong and what's meaningful. But with our consciousness, you know, if we are actually conscious of who we are and what is our relationship, what is my relationship with God? What is my relationship with the environment? What is my relationship with every living being, including humans? Then we can actually start to create real harmony, because it's based on the truth. The Srimad Bhagavatam tells that if you pour water on the root of the tree, the whole tree is nourished. And if you feed the stomach, the whole body is nourished. Every part of a healthy body is serving the whole body.
Yes?
The eyes are not selfishly just doing its own thing. The eyes are directing the rest of the body. The hands are supplying to the rest of the body. The stomach is bringing nourishment to the rest of the body. The nose is bringing oxygen to the rest of the body. Every healthy cell of the body is serving the whole body. That's good health. Now, what is disease? I'm not a doctor, but I'm speaking of a disease from a philosophical perspective. Disease is when germs or cells are in your body and they're selfish. They're egoistic and selfish. They're thinking about themselves. They're not thinking about the whole body. Yes? All the cells that are healthy are good cells. They're just living for the whole body, supplying for the whole body. But a cancer cell, what is a cancer cell doing? It's living for itself. It's eating the other cells. It's fighting a war against the rest of the body. And then all the healthy cells, the good guys, because they're concerned with the whole body, they all start to fight against that disease. Yes? It's like if you have a cold. Those cold germs are selfish guys. They're just thinking about themselves, eating you up. But you have the whole rest of your body fighting against it, fighting for the nation. Yes, there's a common purpose. And actually, you're a nation. A lot of national conflict even within the nation. But a cancer cell is fighting very hard and redoubling, it's regenerating, multiplying, and each one is just about me. And ultimately, if those selfish cells become stronger and stronger and stronger, then the cells that are working together for the whole body, they're ultimately killed and the body dies. That's what's happening in the world. The world is a body. Humanity is a body. And a proper body is where everyone is focused on feeding the stomach. Everyone is focused on serving the whole for the interests of everyone. But when you have people who are greedy and selfish and egoistic, they're like cancer cells in this body. And they're creating havoc. Energy and power, people consider that very important. But knowledge is much more important. Because if we apply our knowledge to utilizing energy properly, it can serve the whole body of the world. It can be utilized in harmony with the Absolute, with God. But if we use that same power and energy without proper knowledge of who we are and what our real purpose in life is, it could create disaster. And higher than knowledge is love and compassion, because that brings real fulfillment. And real love, real compassion brings real harmony to all living beings. because we recognize the spiritual essence in everyone. It's like atomic energy. It took a tremendous amount of knowledge to create it. It can do good, or it can be absolutely destructive, depending on our knowledge, depending on our love, depending on our conceptions, our consciousness. The path of devotion teaches us this simple principle that we are all individual, divine, eternal units who are eternally connected to the Supreme Absolute Truth, or Krishna. And we are all meant to serve the Absolute Truth, and in doing so, we serve each other. We create real harmony because we have common purpose. The spiritual world, or the real world, is where everyone accepts that Krishna's pleasure is my goal in life. Ahoi tikiya pratihata. Everyone is unselfish. In other words, everyone loves. Real love means without a tinge of selfishness. Real love means based on truth, the selfless expression to please God, to be compassionate to all living beings. That is real love. In the spiritual world, it's such an ananda, it's a place of eternal bliss, eternal happiness. It's a gigantic, unlimited family where everyone's there for each other, where everyone loves each other, where everyone will do anything and everything for each other. Why? Because we see each other in relation to the center, to the whole, to Krishna. That is home. The soul is from that place. The soul is of that place. To take the soul out of that land of selfless love and devotion where Krishna is in the center is like throwing a fish on the sand. And that's where we are now, on the sand, on the shore of material existence. That spiritual world is, although it is far beyond material existence, it is present within the heart of every living being today, now. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, real happiness is within. Real intelligence is to understand that, to be illumined within. To rejoice within. That's where that ocean is, that is so deep in satisfaction that anything that happens on this external, superficial world doesn't really matter so much. We try to deal with it, but it cannot change our fulfillment and our integrity. The Bhagavad Gita explains there is the external world. Higher than the external world is the body. Higher than the body is the senses. Higher than the senses is the mind. Higher than the mind is the intelligence, the power of reason. And higher than the intelligence is the Atma. Is the conscious force, our true identity. So to find real fulfillment, we must uncover that essential nature of who we are. In the fifth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna concludes, Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhridam sarva bhutanam gyatva mam shantim richchati. The peace formula, the great acharyas say. What is the peace formula? Simply to understand that the absolute truth is the proprietor of everything. The absolute truth is the enjoyer of everything. And the absolute truth is the best well-wishing friend of all living beings. If we simply understand and accept that, there's real peace. Because we find God within ourselves. We find that relationship. And therefore, we're here for everyone. Because we're all connected. We all have the same source, and we're all related on that level. So the greatest problem in this world is a lack of harmony. But we can't artificially make harmony just by peace treaties. Harmony has to be based on truth, real harmony. What we really have in common. What our real connection to each other is. And then worry. Worry can be utilized for the highest purpose also. A person who is connected to the soul and connected to God, who is finding that deep, deep peace, fulfillment, and love within, worries about other souls. That's compassion. That's higher than not worrying at all. Mother Yashoda worried for Krishna. When Bakasura ate Krishna, all the cowherd boys were worried about him. When Kaliya had Krishna in his coils for all that time, the gopas, the gopis, everyone was worried about Krishna. But that worry was an expression of divine love. And similarly, great personalities. They worry for the people in this world who are suffering birth, old age, disease, and death. Someone may be sick and dying. And if there's somebody who we love, we naturally worry about them. We care for them. We feel for them. But the reality is, time moves on. They're going to die. And you're going to die. It's just the reality of this world. It's just a matter of sooner or later. And the difference between now and 20, 30, 40 years isn't that much. Sukadeva Goswami explained, better one moment of full consciousness than a long life wasted. Paradukaduki. The devotees are, they feel pain for others. But that type of worry, that type of pain of compassion, is perfectly focused on the center. Focused on being an instrument of the mercy of God. Yes? It's not illusion. It's not ignorance. It's based on truth. Therefore, it's beautiful. And acting according to that type of compassion makes your inner fulfillment, your inner realization deeper and deeper and deeper. Because it enriches your relationship with God. Because we're serving without selfishness. We're serving seeing the truth, being compassionate to the souls of others, and seeing their relationship, feeling their relationship to ourselves and to God. So the path of devotion is the path that transforms the material world into spiritual, through consciousness. Material world is the material world. We can't change it on the external level too much. Whatever government, whatever everything, still, everyone's going to die. We want to make the best we can. No doubt. It's our duty to make the best possible we can. And the best that can be is to facilitate people to get out, to realize the world within. This is a universal truth. Socrates, he was told to drink poison. Hemlock, he was in prison. He said to the person who was giving him the poison, "You can't kill me until you find me." Now, for the jail keeper, fine, we already found you. You're in prison. You're going to die here. But for him, "I'm not this body. I'm the eternal soul. You can't kill me." And he had conviction. He wasn't scared. He was not worried. Because he actually was Brahman realized, according to our acharyas. He realized, "I'm the soul." So he wasn't worried. But he took all risks to teach us, because he was worried about others. Isn't that amazing? He wasn't worried about himself dying because you can't find me. But he was worried about people who didn't have that realization, knowing that it was within them. He wanted to help them to understand that. Jesus, he was crucified. He didn't have to. All he had to do was leave town. They told him what was being planned, and he knew. And he just walked right into it. Because he knew this is what he had to do to establish Dharma according to God's will and his lila. So he may have suffered in one sense, but that suffering was ecstasy. It was voluntary. Because he wasn't suffering for himself, he was suffering for others. Haridas Thakur, he didn't mind suffering for others. Selfless love. And so many blissful saints. It's not that all saints get tortured. We read about so many blissful saints who are just in ecstasy, intoxicated with love of God, giving Krishna to everyone, giving Ram to everyone. They understand that in order for there to be harmony, there has to be a common center. And there's only one possible common center. And that's the complete whole, or God. Otherwise, there's no possibility. We may say humanity is the common center. But then what about all these little cows that are getting their throats cut and are screaming in agony? That's not real harmony. What about the environment? Nationalism? It may be good, but we have to go above that too. Because we may harmonize within our own nation. I haven't ever seen a nation able to do that. But what about nations outside our own? Are they not our brothers and sisters? They're not, unless we see the common origin. Krishna says in Gita, Aham Bija Pratapita, I am the seed-giving father for all living beings. When we recognize our own relationship with Krishna, then we recognize our relationship with every living being. And we can actually create harmony. It's the greatest need. There's no solution, really, to worrying except finding the peace, the love, and the compassion in ourselves and being instruments of that compassion by connecting to that source that harmonizes everything. We have often given the example of good dog and bad dog. Krishna tells in Gita there's a divine and there's a demoniac nature in all of us. The good dog is humility, charity, knowledge of the self, compassion, morality, generosity. And the bad dog is greed and lust and envy and anger and arrogance and selfishness. Now we have both of those dogs within us, and they're both howling for food. And what is the food? The decisions we make of which dog we're going to feed, which voice within the mind we're going to accommodate. And every choice we make, we're making one or the other stronger and the other weaker. Every time we make an immoral choice, we become more addicted to immorality because the bad dog becomes stronger and the good dog becomes weaker. Every time we make a right choice, that's how we become liberated. By making the right choices. And how is that possible in a world where all around us there's so much propaganda for selfishness? It's very dangerous if the cancer cells are seen to be the good cells and the good cells are seen to be cancerous. But that's what Kali Yuga is about. Bhagavad Gita says what's taken to be irreligion is religion, and what's taken to be irreligion is religion. So, there's so much propaganda to be selfish, to be egoistic, to be greedy. This is what success is about. This is how you get ahead in this world. People are so interested in getting ahead, but we need people who have heads. The head is supposed to lead us in the right direction. Very difficult. So the most important thing is to create a spirit, to find the spiritual world within ourselves, to find that oceanic peace, happiness, love, and compassion within ourselves, and to be instruments of that within the world. That is what is needed. And if we find people who share the same common center of purifying our hearts, of serving each other, and being kind and compassionate and forgiving, then that association with sadhus, with saintly persons, with people who have common spiritual interest, that association is like the spiritual world because we have the same center. But if it becomes sectarian, then it's not real. It's not real. It's not that we're better than someone else. If we're really serving the center together, then we're trying to harmonize in a universal way. God has many names. God has many forms. God has Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavaniti Sabhyate has been revealed in different ways. Knowledge is so important. And through this knowledge, and through this inner purification, God reveals himself and gives us light, gives us hope. Then individually and collectively, we can be concerned with the real issues, with the eternal issues. And we deal with the temporary situations of this world from that platform of the eternal, blissful self. And from the spiritual perspective, this is how we come above all this worry and curry and flurry. What is the other? Hurry and curry and worry, and the mind is in a flurry. And in this age of Kali, the most powerful way of bringing us into that inner connection and uniting ourselves with that center, with that focus and connection with God, is the congregational chanting of the holy name. Is there any questions?
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Maharaj. First of all, I would like to offer my humble obeisance unto your lotus feet. Maharaj, as you explained that according to Srimad Bhagavatam, that jiva jivasya jivana. So in this case, suppose in a fisherman, he's catching the fish, so fishes, and selling in the markets to maintain his family. So do you think he's doing some sinful activities?
Do you understand? rather than talking about what's sinful, we'll just speak the science of how the world works. That whatever suffering is coming to those fish, the reaction of that suffering has to come upon him. That's the laws of karma. Does that answer your question? We may feel sympathy that he knows no other way to maintain his family. And we may respect him for that, but still, you know, if our survival is in causing pain and death to others, there will be a reaction. Is there any other questions? There are also hunters that maintain their families.
Hare Krishna, Dandavat Maharaj. Maharaj, it is said that devotional service dries up or fries the seed of sin that is there in our heart. Means pure devotional service only does that. But for sadhaka like neophyte like us, so what is the solution or any immediate response to sinful activity or any sinful thought we may get?
Any form of sincere devotional service has that effect. Pure devotional service has the complete effect. When there's pure devotional service, then no such seeds can remain. But in the sadhaka stage of devotional service, it is having that effect of burning those seeds.
It happens again and again. It's once we try to control sin, again erupts.
Vyavashayatmaka bhuti reke hakuru nandana bahushaka hirantascha budhayo vyavashayana. It is required that we be determined. Considering for endless births we have been conditioning ourselves and addicting ourselves to these things. A few years or even a lifetime of just practicing devotional service and purifying ourselves and overcoming it is a very small price. It's a tiny, minuscule price for something so great. We just must be determined, be sincere. And if we are determined and sincere, then Krishna will be there to help us. It's not you against Maya. Maya is all powerful. You cannot resist her. But if you're simply sincere and determined to do the best you can, then you have all of Krishna's help. And Krishna will be there for you. He's always here. He's there for everyone. But he only reveals himself to help us according to our sincerity. Krishna's in your heart. Just try your best. Don't worry about how hard it is. Just keep trying your best with sincerity, and Krishna will be there.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Hari Bol.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna Maharaj, Pandor Pranam. You told us that to stop worrying and to loss of anxiety, we have to surrender to Krishna by congregational chanting of holy name. But how can we really surrender ourselves to Krishna, or how can one surrender to Krishna by congregational chanting? Means, how is the process? Or how can one do it? Please explain, Maharaj.
Begins by chanting. Regularly. Medicine should be taken regularly. And then that's the beginning, to chant regularly. And then we try to go deeper into the holy name by living according to the qualities of a Vaishnava or a true devotee. Trinadapi sunichena taror iba sihishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. To live our life with humility, with tolerance and forgiveness, offering honor and respect to others, not demanding or expecting it ourselves. To live on the principles of morality, integrity. To live in a mood of servitude to others. When we strive to live our life like this, and we chant regularly, then the holy name will bring our consciousness deeper and deeper and deeper to understand our own spiritual essence and our relationship with God, who is all beautiful. When you actually experience the beauty of Krishna within your heart, that's param drisvani vartate. It's such a higher taste, it's such a higher experience, that whatever happens in this world, you deal with it. But nothing can take away that unlimited love, that unlimited satisfaction of your relationship with Krishna. And you just want to share that with everyone. That is the result of chanting properly. Is there any other questions? Yes.
Hari Bol. Yeah. Hare Krishna Maharaj. Maharaj, what are activities we are doing, as we saw that fisherman, he's like, we can directly see he's troubling those fishes. But what are activities we are doing, somewhere or other, we are exploiting somebody. Like, whatever we are working in different companies, we are exploiting somebody. So by laws of karma, we are going to get reaction of all those things. So, like, what should we do now? We don't have any option now. We know, we understand everything, but how we should act now.
Who's asking the question? Your company is exploiting others. Says that with a smile. In this world, exploitation is inevitable. To survive, people are exploiting each other. But from the spiritual perspective, if we have that mood of servitude and we try as far as possible not to go beyond what's necessary, killing living beings is one thing. You have to get the reaction of killing living beings. In business, our motivation should not be to destroy others. Our motivation should be to be the best we could be. Yes, we may have to try to defeat competition, but it's not in a malicious way. If we're actually trying to destroy other people's lives, we're going to get all the karma of that, 100%. But if we're trying to do better than others, trying to defeat our competitors, and we try to do it in as far as possible in an honest way with integrity, there will be some karma, but it will be minimized. And if we give some of the profits for spiritual charitable purposes, then that can remove. If we're really doing things in a malicious way, then even if we give it to spiritual charitable way, the karma will still be on us. But if we're trying to do things with proper integrity, proper honor, which and we give some of the results in a charitable spirit to a spiritual cause, and at the same time we're purifying our own heart by chanting God's name and performing spiritual purifications, then we can rise above those minimal karmic situations and they will not seriously affect our lives. Does that answer your question? We should not, if we're using our business profits for a cause that's helpful to others as well, if we have a spirit of compassion rather than a spirit of greed, then the karma is minimized or nullified. But when we are motivated by greed, selfishness, and inconsideration of how we hurt others, or hurting people beyond the need, then serious karma will come upon us. Great accomplishments are not as satisfying or not as important for the welfare of the world as great qualities. We were giving the example in Calcutta from Srimad Bhagavatam. Indra had the world's record for the most Aswamedha yajnas. What was it, 100? And he was very proud of his world record. It was not world record, it was universal record. No one had ever achieved what he did. And to perform one of these yajnas took years, tremendous amount of effort and tremendous amount of wealth. And it's a massive endeavor. You have to be an undisputed ruler of your planet in order to do it. And then even then, so much wealth, so much time, so much precision. To do one of such yajnas was absolutely impossible for 99.9% of the population of the universe. Indra did 100. It was the record. And Prithu Maharaj, who was an avatar, Shaktivesh, he had done 99, and he was about to tie the record. And then he was inevitably going to break the record. Now, Indra was so worried. He was so fearful. And he was so envious that he was going to lose his standing and not be number one. That he began to sabotage secretly Prithu Maharaj's attempts to perform the yajna. And every time he sabotaged it, Prithu Maharaj's son would catch him, and Indra would disguise himself as a saint, as a sadhu, sannyasi. And then Indra's son would say, I can't punish you, you're a sadhu. And this kept happening again and again and again, and finally they caught him, and Prithu Maharaj was about to punish him. And a higher was Brahma. Brahma came down and said to Prithu, this is Indra's nature. He's a great devotee, but he's very proud, and he's very attached. And because he's so proud and attached, he's creating havoc. He's creating irreligious principles. He's creating confusion, everything. For the sake of the world, just let him hold the record and don't do any more yajnas. So Prithu Maharaj agreed. Now the culmination of doing a yajna is Vishnu himself comes personally to accept your offering. Prithu said, all right, I will not do any more yajnas ever again, because I will honor Indra, let him be the record holder forever. When he did that, Vishnu came for him. Vishnu ignored Indra. Indra was standing there. And Prithu Maharaj was so happy and pleased with, Vishnu was so happy and pleased with Prithu Maharaj. And ultimately Indra was so embarrassed that he bowed down and apologized. But still, he would have done the same thing if Prithu tried to do it again. Now, who does the world love after this story? Does the world love Indra more or Prithu Maharaj more? Should we take a vote? Say Hari Bol very loudly if you feel Indra is the better of the two. Now, this is millions of years later. Say Hari Bol very loudly if you think Prithu Maharaj is the better of the two. Now, Indra's listening. But so is Prithu Maharaj. And so is Vishnu. So it is a fact. that nobody cares so much, you know, these world records and having the biggest and having the most. You know, it may impress people's minds, but usually when you impress people's minds, either as soon as you don't have that, you don't impress them anymore, you're nothing. Or else they're envious of you. But if you actually have good character, if you have good character like Preetu, willing to be unselfish for the cause of the greater good, which Preetu Maharaj did, then people honor you and love you from their hearts. What's a more fulfilling life? To have the most or to be the most? People are very, very addicted and passionate to try to have the most, to do the most. But it's not helping the world. What will help the world when people try to be the most? That means live by the best, by the highest qualities. And the highest quality is to live for the greater good of everyone. And how do we do that? By focusing on the center of what we all have in common, essentially. Janmadyasya yataha, our relationship with God. That's what we all have in common. Water the root of that tree. And we can do universal good. Preetu Maharaj did that. That's the example. Accomplishments are great, but the quality, the consciousness, the selflessness, the compassion, the devotion in which we do that is all important. That's what the world will remember, and that's what God will see.
So we would like to thank His Holiness Radhanath Maharaj for this wonderful class and question answer session by loudly chanting
Haribol.
So the next Prerna festival will be a combined for the month of December and January, since in the month of December we'll be having the December marathon. So on the 1st of Jan, which is the new year, so we will be having the next Prerna festival, and we will be having the honor of once again having with us His Grace Radhika Raman Prabhu. And Radhika Raman Prabhu, a PhD from Oxford, and also we'll have His Grace Garuda Prabhu, who is also a PhD from Harvard. And both of them will be presenting on a topic which will be advertised soon. So that will be the new year, 1st of January 2010. So we welcome all the students who have come for the first time for this Prerna festival. Please, you may rise. Those who have come for the first time, please stand up. Thank you very much. So there is a Journey of Self-Discovery course and Life Management courses starting from this Saturday and Sunday onwards. So you may give your names. And also IVS pamphlets have been given listing out the details of various programs conducted by ISKCON. So you may fill these forms in and submit at the gift counter and collect their gifts. Also the beads counter have been set up. If you are interested in taking some of these beads, you may also take that. Thank you very much for coming. Let us welcome them by loudly chanting. Thank you. Also, a bookstall has been set up displaying Radhanath Maharaj's autobiography called The Journey Home, So interested students may kindly go and see those books.